This week, the South China Morning Post reported on what it calls a social insurance shake-up in China in the regulation of migrant workers. The Economist says the notorious Hukou system is being relaxed and that Marx would approve. To discuss these changes, we're joined now by Dr. Dan Wang, China Director for Eurasia Group and the former Chief Economist at Hang Seng Bank China in Shanghai. Dr. Wang, good morning.
Good morning.
Firstly, I wonder if you could explain for us what the Hukou system is.
The Hukou system is this household registration system started from the 1970s. And that was a way to tie people with their local registration so that Chinese government can control internal migration flow. Because there's always limited resources. They don't want just everybody to head to the biggest cities in China.
So it's a way of regulating the flow of labor, in particular internally in China. We've heard that recently the State Council has released new guidelines for the Hukou system. What do those new guidelines say?
At the core of those guidelines, it's about disconnecting social welfare and other benefits with Hukou. This is quite a positive progress from the previous really stringent implementation of the rule, so it's welcomed. But at its core, it's still just to codify the existing trend, because Chinese government doesn't do the overhaul of any existing policies. They always take their time doing it over a number of years, trying to roll out nationwide after the first couple of years of piloting program.
So it seems that there's then been a broader trend towards less regulation in the Hukou system. How long has that trend been going and what's been driving it?
It has been going for about 10 years for the latest round of Hukou restriction relaxation. And the government was highly aware that China was going to enter into this demographic decline. So there's really no point to restrict as stringent as what they did before. And for Chinese migrant workers, they are highly educated comparing to 20 years ago. And for the manufacturing sector, they actually need to attract more workers rather than less. And for the government, they also have a better governance skill when it comes to allocating the medical care resources and education resources over time. So it seems to be the right time to relax. And since COVID, this progress has been greatly accelerated. It is also tied to this fundamental belief that the government needs to provide better social welfare for everyone in China.
So, Dan, how many people within China are in this category of working in a place which is different from where their Hukou registration is, and therefore working in a place where they don't have access to education and social welfare benefits?
Depending what estimates you look at, we normally use the number 200 million of those migrant workers who do not have access to local welfare. But to be fair, actually, no one is constrained in their job seeking anymore. Even if they're not from that city, nobody has a difficulty to just rent apartment and live there. The only binding constraint is actually for education of those migrant workers' children. It is still tied to this Hukou system. Even after the latest reform that's just announced, it is still tied to the Hukou system. And the government has trouble actually providing enough high-end education to satisfy all the migrant workers.
That's a pretty significant constraint, though. What does that mean for the education of the children of internal migrant workers in China?
That has caused a huge inequality because for Chinese education system, there are at least 7 parallel different system there. And there's a rural-urban divide. There's the capital and the second-tier city, third-city divide. And there's also a big difference between the county education and the village education versus the urban education. So for those migrant workers, they have to, in most of the cases, to leave their children behind in their hometown or even in the villages when they're working in the cities. And even if they could get their children into some sort of private school in those cities, they still need to go back to their hometown to take the national entrance exam in high school. And that really tied their options for their children to get into the best education system in China.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Dr. Dan Wang, China Director for Eurasia Group, about these recently announced guidelines changing the way the Hukou system works in China. Dan, economically, what do you see the impact of the hukou system as it has been operating being, and how will the trends that you've described change those economic impacts?
The hukou system in the past have served its purpose because China did need to, this is a very brutal system, I have to point out, China need to provide enough cheap labor for it to go through this industrial transformation. So in the 70s and 80s, a lot of the agricultural worker went to the cities and work at extremely low wages. And they were actually the foundation for China's so-called economic miracle in the following 30 years. But now when we look at the system, you can clearly see this information gap and knowledge gap and how that has contributed to this mismatch of skills in the job market. And there are about 30 million labor shortage in China's manufacturing sector, and that is actually concentrated in those high-end blue-collar jobs, say the workers that can operate machine tools on the factory floor or write some simple codes. But because of this unequal access to education, actually China is unable to provide enough of those high-end blue-collar workers. So we're at the beginning of addressing this issue. And in the back of policymakers' mind, they understand that education is actually the key if China wants to realize its long-term economic target.
Dan, I've read in some of the English language Chinese state media some commentary saying that a key question with this new guideline is going to be the extent to which China's megacities, such as Beijing and Shanghai, will actually adopt the guidelines. Do you agree with that observation?
I do, to a big extent, because for the few areas in China that is still seeing population inflow, the tier one cities account for like 80-90% of those regions. And we're talking about Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, and Guangzhou, but they are the ones that are least acceptive to those new rules, especially for Beijing. Shanghai is slightly better. I think the local government still has high incentive to protect the local residents' benefits. And that is a very short-sighted view, but you can see the strong pushback politically. They want to provide better pension, better education, and easier access for the local residents. But in the long term, it's actually hurting their competitive advantage.
That's an interesting observation from the outside, because I think it's very easy for us to think of the Chinese economy as very strictly controlled from the center. But from what you're saying, there are internal governmental pressures that limit the potential effectiveness of things like a new guideline on how to administer the hukou system. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The central local government tension is very real. From the outside, people would think that central government in China, especially President Xi Jinping, has all the power. They can direct what local government would do. But even to this day, there are a lot of things on the local level that central government cannot control or even to know. Say the local government debt, for example, that is a perfect example to show how little that a central government can push the locals to do the right thing. I think for Beijing and Shanghai, they are at such a center point of China's political and economic priority. So the local officials actually has a lot of leverage when they negotiate with central government what they want to do and what pace they want to take.
Dan, we talked about the situation with education and the impact that has for families of non-registered habitual residents. I wonder if you could give us a little bit more of a portrait of what you've described as a very harsh system. What does it mean for the day-to-day life of people who are working in places where they aren't registered in the hukou system?
Job-wise, there's no discrimination. For migrant workers, they can find any job they want in the city, but usually it is costing so much more for them to live in the city, then there's less of a point, usually for them to keep the children around. So when their children are left behind, you can see this is where the harsh reality kicks in, because for different cities in China, they actually have different threshold to enter the same university. The score you need by taking a national entrance exam in Beijing is so much lower than the score you need if you take a national entrance exam, say, in Gansu or in Shandong. And that inequality was created purely through the hukou system. It is a way to protect those local residents' children's access to the best education resources. And for the migrant workers, because they do need their children to have better education so that the whole family can be lifted, but because of this inequality in access to education, their chances of changing the social class is limited.
Yeah, that does sound like a very tough predicament for those workers. Now, obviously, speaking out against the prevailing policies of the government is a very risky thing to do in China, but does the situation of internal migrants create political or other pressures from those migrant communities in China?
Oh, definitely. That's another aspect of this whole hukou reform. The central government was reluctant to push the hukou reform too quickly because they were worried about social instability. In the past, if there are, say, disputes over wages or working hours, then migrant workers tend to protest even internally within the factory. But in that situation, actually, the government and local police always had the option of sending them back to their hometown. And alleviating or just eliminating that restriction is causing concerns for the local police, because then they will have less control over the so-called stability. Even to this day, I think the government is still highly concerned on how they should control this part of the population. As soon as COVID started, one thing that's working to Chinese government favor is actually the big cities' jobs are shrinking. There's a massive layoff in sectors such as finance, real estate, IT, education platform, and many of the unemployed migrant workers simply went back to their hometown. So that has alleviated a lot of pressure for them to maintain the local stability. But in the 15th five-year plan, there's this focus on investing in people. That's their exact words, investing in people. We don't know what exactly it means, but certainly it contains an element to ensure the equal access to the social welfare and to protect their benefits at the most basic level.
So clearly, the reform of hukou is an ongoing and long task. In that context, Dan, how significant do you see these new state council guidelines as being?
It is quite significant in the sense that it could create this urgency for local governments to complete the hukou system reform, because the reform started about 10 years ago and the different regions have different pace. And a number of the local governments has been stalling in pushing this forward. Although this is not a new reform, but as soon as codified by the state council, then it is a harder constraint for the local officials to comply. And I can see that over time, there will be also more fiscal transfer from central government to local government. Now there's not such a transfer yet, but it is the right direction. And it can alleviate a lot of the local government debt problem, and ultimately to improve the welfare for all.
Dr. Dan Wang, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you for having me.
And Dan is China Director for the Eurasia Group and former Chief Economist at Hang Seng Bank China in Shanghai.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.